And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light, the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our dramatic program today, God Gives Us Many Lives, was written by Jan Hartmann and is presented in observance of the Festival of Purim. Is a festival celebrating the deliverance of the Jews. Many know the Purim story of King Ahasuerus, Queen Esther, Haman, and Mordecai, of how Queen Esther foiled Haman's plot to destroy all the Jews. Most Jewish children have played the story many times. Generations have passed since the first Esther and the first Mordecai helped free their people from the first Haman. It must be that in the many times of oppression faced by the Jewish people, there have been other Esthers and Mordecais to fight the all too many Hamans. Today, in celebration of the Festival of Purim, we give you a Purim story from the recent past of an Esther who looks back and remembers a day when she helped to liberate some of her people, a day when her Mordecai met a tragic fate. At first glance, this stocky, middle-aged woman would seem a very unlikely Esther.
Actually, my name is Ruth. I was a happy little girl once in an old medieval town with great stone walls around it. As children, we played hide-and-seek in its shadows until the year the Germans marched in and occupied the town. That Purim, there wasn't much laughter, though we were determined to play out the play. A boy, a beautiful boy named Leo Putski, played Mordecai, and I was Queen Esther. Since Leo and I liked each other very much, rehearsals were sometimes a little difficult.
Mordecai, I am only a woman. What can a woman do? No one enters the king's presence without his permission. How can I interfere? He listens to Haman and no one else.
You're his wife, Esther. His beloved and cherished wife.
Wife, yes, but I am no counselor of state, Mordecai. Just a wife.
Our people must stand together or they have nothing.
What can a woman do, Mordecai? Tell me.
You are very beautiful, Esther.
I mean it, Ruth. You really are beautiful.
Now, Leo, we're supposed to be rehearsing our Purim play.
I know, but as we rehearse, I can never forget that for us, the Germans are Haman.
Well, I'm not really Esther, so...
As things are today, you could be. And I could be a real Mordecai. And no matter who you are beautiful.
Now, Leo, stop it and rehearse. Now, let's begin with your speech. Our people must stand together or they have nothing.
All right, Ruth, all right. I'll try to be good. Our people must stand together or they have nothing. It's true. Even today, we have nothing. Poland gave us nothing. Now we wear yellow stars, and then what? If I were more like Mordecai or Gideon, my anger would be like God's own. We are slaves now, Ruth, but sooner or later, we must be set free.
Leo, when you talk like that, you only make it worse for yourself. We must take what comes and pray. Though I myself would do anything to help us be free.
My father, Abraham Horowitz, was the leader of the Jewish community. He was a wonderful man, my father, with a beautiful black beard and large, gentle hands that would stroke my tired head at night or touch my cheek lightly to comfort me. My father was a good friend of the mayor's, who, poor man, found himself caught between three worlds, the Germans, the Poles, and the Jews. Out of 1,000 families in Bresch, 300 were Jewish, and between them, my father and the mayor shared the responsibility for all our lives.
I know you don't tell me everything, Mr. Mayor, and I try to understand it. But now I think you're keeping something from me I ought to know.
I try to keep nothing from you that matters, Avraham.
I have reports from here, from there. Bad news. Deportation. Ghettos are being formed. Why? For more pogroms? Something of the sort may soon happen here. Certainly there is something in the air, but no one can put his finger on it, a feeling. A man's old friends begin to turn away from the yellow star. There are things, do you understand? And I must know what you're keeping from me.
Nothing. Nothing.
I don't believe you. I can't afford to believe you.
Come here, Avraham. Look out the window.
What do you see? I see the town where we grew up, Vladimir. The same streets, the same buildings we've known for almost 50 years.
What else do you see, Avraham?
I see the hills we ran as boys.
What do you see directly below us?
Four German soldiers in a patrol car.
Four German soldiers right outside my door every day. You can see I am not free.
We Jews are less free than you. They do not force you to wear a yellow star. There are no reports of ghettos for such as you.
The Germans occupy us, and we all weigh Jew and Gentile alike. Our turn will come.
So you will tell me nothing?
I know nothing.
Yet you talk to Commandant Schroeder every day.
Commandant Schroeder tells me about milk shipments and the number of dump carts he needs to move sandbags from one corner of the town square to another. Nothing else. I no longer run this town.
We were boys together, Vladimir.
Many years ago.
I must count on you. There is no one else.
As your friend, then, I tell you not to trust me.
I must, Vladimir, I must. I can only pray that our friendship will finally be stronger than fear.
Well, take my word for it, Avraham. So far, the commandant talks only of milk deliveries and dung carts.
We were afraid, but we weren't quite sure of what. The uniform? The look of the Germans? If you talk to one, he seemed human. But even so, we were afraid. Every day I went to school past the soldiers in the street. I knew each of their faces as you know familiar landmarks. The blonde one, the one with the mustache, the dark one with the black hair and the pockmarked face. I wondered what their mothers and fathers looked like. And I wondered what war was really like. And day by day, something ominous and dangerous grew in the wind like a distant storm. And then suddenly, frightening things began happening closer to home.
Ruth!
Leo!
Arrest in the countryside, not far from here. The middle of the night, 37 Jews were arrested and shot for underground activities and for being partisans. 37 Jews and 12 Poles.
Leo, it can't be true.
It is true, and thank God it is in a way. Because now we know what is going to happen. They're going to kill us all.
No, Leo.
Yes, but before that happens, we can fight.
How can we fight? We have no weapons.
How have Jews always fought? With their wits, their hearts. Think of the Purim play. Mordecai and Queen Esther fought. Ah! We will fight too. It's a German patrol car. They're coming here.
Are we going to be arrested?
I don't know.
Shall I let him in?
Open up in there.
You have no choice.
I'm looking for Avraham Horowitz.
He's not here.
No? Where is he?
I don't know.
Who are you?
Ruth Horowitz, his daughter.
And the boy?
The boy is Leo Putski.
Ah, you talk sharply, Leo Putski. Perhaps you hate me, huh?
You asked my name and I told you. But I don't have to tell you my opinions.
Leo Putski, huh? I shall remember. As for you, Ruth Horowitz, tell your father when he returns that Commandant Schroeder wants to talk with him. Well, you're a very pretty girl, Ruth. Very pretty. Why are you wearing that costume? Huh?
Well, Leo and I have been rehearsing for our Purim play.
Ah, you're an actress there. I think I would like to see you on the stage. Why don't you send me tickets? I might even bring you flowers backstage. Now, don't forget to tell your father I want to talk to him.
What do you think he wants from my father, Leo?
I don't know. I only know I'd like to kill him.
You shouldn't have talked to him that way.
Why not? He's the enemy. You see the way he looked at you?
Yes, but what do I care? He's an old man.
He doesn't think so. You better keep away from him.
Commandant Schroede went from our house directly to the mayor's office. And a few minutes later, the mayor's face was white as he said,
"You expect the consignment, as you call it, to be delivered within the week?"
"Within the week, without fail. You will be held personally responsible for any delays."
"Personally?"
"Yes, office holders must shoulder their own responsibilities."
But other people are not always so easy to control."
"Anything is possible with proper organization. I expect the consignment within the week."
"I'm afraid Abraham Horowitz will give me trouble. He's a strong, stubborn man."
"Horowitz? Ach, the one with a pretty daughter, huh? Yeah, I was by his house before coming here. What about him?"
"He has been my friend for years. Not rich, not poor. Proud man, well-educated. A hard man sometimes."
"Be careful, Mr. Mayor. Old friendships can be dangerous. What can you, tell me about his daughter?"
"Ruth?"
"Yes, Ruth."
"Oh, she's very dark and very pretty and very young."
"But, not too young, huh?" "Hey, Mr. Mayor, you will do as you've been ordered. Hurry up!"
How can one describe a fear? Yet I only know our fear was so big, it wrapped us up and smothered us in its arms. The two men, Commandant Schroeder and the mayor, came together, talked, and moved on. It was but a moment later that the mayor sent an urgent message to my father, who was quick to respond.
"Abraham, my friend, life has brought us to a crossroads.
So at last you have news."
"Yes, Abraham. It is my curse that I have news."
"Come to the point."
"We have been friends for a long time, Abraham. My heart is wrenched. But you are ordered to select 100 Jews to be shipped to the east."
"What?"
"Commandant Schroeder says they will be used to build railroads."
"Out of the question. How can I give him 100 men?"
"What choice have you? The commandant expects these men within the week. And Abraham, he is holding me personally responsible for them."
"They tie the noose tight, these Germans."
"We are all trapped. One day they will put me against the wall and shoot me. I try to believe that if I do my duty, they will not kill me. But in my heart, I know they will. I do not sleep at night anymore. I have a wife and children. What will become of them? What is to be done? The Germans will massacre Europe."
"There must be something to do. We Jews have been trapped before and have escaped. We must be shrewd, clever. To begin with, we must do something so that Schroeder never gets his 100 men."
"What happens to me, Abraham, if you do something?"
"What will happen if I don't? We will act with you or without you. It's up to you."
"But I am personally responsible."
"And so am I. To the 300 Jewish families of Bresh."
"They will hang me."
"We must get in touch with the partisans in the forest. If we can get word to them, they'll help some of us to escape over the border. But how will we get past the Germans?"
"That's almost impossible. Besides, what if all they really want is 100 men and no more?"
"Don't be a fool, Vladimir. This is only the beginning. Would you turn over 100 men, 100 of your friends, 100 husbands, fathers, human beings? Would you turn even one of them over to those madmen? Of course not. We must try to find some way for our people to cross the German lines."
I'll never forget the afternoon my father came home with that news. The jolly man I had known so long was gone. When he came in, He found Leo and me working on costumes for the Purim play.
Father.
Hello, Ruth. Leo.
Sir.
What's the matter?
I told Commandant Schrader was here.
Yes, he was.
What did he say?
He said he wanted to see you.
So I heard.
It's something terrible, isn't it?
The Commandant demands that we turn over to him 100 Jews. He says to go east and work on the railroads. 100 now and no doubt hundreds more later.
Oh.
How could any man choose from his friends for such a purpose?
What will you do?
What can I do? Let them hang me. Let them hang us all one by one so that in the end they will have many corpses, but no slaves.
If I could only do something for our people the way Queen Esther did.
Commandant Schroeder thought our Queen Esther was a very beautiful woman. He told her so. Said he'd like to see her on stage.
Yes. Yes, he did. Leo, Father, I have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps your Queen Esther can help her people out of trouble after all.
This was my plan. Commandant Schroeder had said he wanted to see me as Queen Esther in the Purim play. Well, I would send tickets. Tickets for himself and his whole garrison. If enough Germans came to watch the play, perhaps our people could take care of whatever guard was left, escape into the forest, and make their way across the border. Certainly, some of us could find safety that way. Both Father and Leo thought the idea might work. So I sat down and wrote Commandant Schroeder, inviting him to be my guest, even hinting at the possibility of spending the evening with him afterwards. His quick acceptance of my invitation made it clear that the Purim play this year would be most unusual. The night of the play, I saw the Commandant to his seat and found him eagerly looking forward to the evening.
Ah, young lady, you look quite lovely, but Masich, I'm looking forward to your acting. I look forward more to what may happen afterwards. Huh?
Thank you, Herr Commandant. You'll never know how happy I am that so many of your men are here tonight.
Well, I ordered them to come to make sure you'd have a good audience. By the way, I have been told that your Purim play is a very old and honored festival. I'm also told this innocent story of Queen Esther is really a rallying cry for the Jews in celebration of their freedom from bondage? Well, this seems to me a very strange time for you Jews to be celebrating freedom. In fact, I'm most curious to hear what your play has to say about it.
Something you may never hear if I don't hurry backstage. So if you will excuse me, Herr Commandant, the curtain will rise in a very few minutes. I promise to join you again at intermission, and you can tell me then what you think.
So the Purim play began. It was during the first act that the mayor suddenly appeared backstage with the good news.
Listen, Abraham. With nearly the entire German garrison here at the play, the partisans were able to surprise the guard and put them completely out of commission. I am told your people are moving into the forest quite easily.
God bless you, Vladimir.
I'd better go out front now before they miss me. Good luck to you, the rest of your plans.
Goodbye, Vladimir.
Goodbye, Abraham. Goodbye.
I was scared to death at first, but not anymore. Listen to that applause.
Most of it is for you, Ruth.
Oh, for you too, Leo.
Well, I guess it's time for me to get out front of the curtain and play my violin. I hope music really does have charms.
Play it loud and long, Leo, with lots of encores. Our people need all the time they can get before the Germans discover what we're doing.
I'll do my best.
Ruth, everything has gone well so far.
Yes,
Father. I will play the adagio.
Then I'd better hurry up and join the Commandant before he comes backstage looking for me.
Lucy, I hope there's not too much more left of your play. I look forward most to the moment when you will come back to my lodgings with me. We will have a cozy supper with some excellent Rhine wine and a library of fine music which will help us forget this scratchy violin playing by your friend Leo. It should be a lovely little party for the very loveliest of ladies.
You flatter me too much, Herr Commandant. And really now I've made you no promises, have I?
Of course not. Pretty girl like you has no need to make promises, hmm?
Oh, dear. Leo's violin solo is almost over.
I'm afraid I must go backstage and get ready for the second act.
If you must, you must, but I can only say Act Two can never end soon enough for me.
The Jews are gone.
The Jews are gone? What are you talking about?
They're all gone. They've killed four of our guards and gone into the woods. Their houses are empty.
Pull back the curtain. Get everybody backstage. Yeah. Tear down the curtains if you have to.
There's no one here. No one on stage anywhere. They're gone.
They'll go after them.
That's how most of us escaped. My father lost his way and ran into a German search party, which shot him on the spot. The Germans never had a chance to punish the mayor. He had hanged himself first. But Leo, poor Leo, was the real hero of that Purim play. He could have gotten away, but he stopped running and he waited for the Germans to catch up with him, drawing their attention away from where he knew four of us were hiding. The Germans took Leo prisoner and brought him back to the commandant, who seemed to blame him for everything. Angry, gun in hand, he walked up to Leo.
So you are an actor, a violin player. You're also a liar. You're all fools. You really think your friends will escape?
I do. Some of them have escaped already.
None of them can hold out against us for long.
Our spirit will hold out forever.
A fine Purim play you had. This how all your Purim festivals end, huh? With death?
They all end with faith. Faith in the end of tyranny. And faith in the beginning of freedom.
Freedom, huh? You want freedom, Leo Putski? Well, you shall have it. Here is freedom for you.
Yes, he shot him. Shot my brave Mordecai of many years ago. Poor Leo. He was as free then as anyone could be. Tonight, Purim is celebrated again. And as always, with laughter. But as always, some of us laugh through tears.
In the book of Esther, it is written, they should keep the 14th day of the month of Adar and the 15th day of the same yearly, as the days wherein the Jews had rest from their enemies, and the month which was turned unto them from sorrow to gladness, and from mourning into a good day, that they should make them days of feasting and gladness, and of sending portions one to another, and gifts to the poor. The story of Purim was written as a reminder that man may be oppressed, but he has in him, in his humanity, in his spirit, and in his faith, the qualities of endurance which mean liberation. The story of Esther and Mordecai's heroism has many chapters written in the ink of generations. It will go on and on. This we celebrate.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Sidney Greenberg, spiritual leader of Temple Sinai of Philadelphia. Rabbi Greenberg.
Purim is a minor holiday with a major message. Beneath its gay and carefree exterior, there is a sober lesson for all men. To the tyrant, it offers the grim reminder that he who kindles the flame of hatred for another is lighting a fire underneath his own home. Intolerance is the madness the gods inflict upon those they would destroy. Haman appeals to the jungle heritage in the heart of man. The suspicion of the stranger, the dislike for the unlike. Difference is synonymous with treason. Who among us is altogether free from this primitive burden of prejudice? How many of us truly affirm, not only with our lips, but by our deeds, that those who differ from us are not thereby inferior to us? Too often, we put a peculiar interpretation on the command of Leviticus, love thy neighbor as thyself. We behave as though it read, love thy neighbor, provided he is exactly as thyself, wearing your color skin, sharing your opinions, worshiping at your shrine. America has been called the land of fabulous differences. These differences are America's glory and strength. Our dream is not a homogenized society with all differences dissolved, all individuality boiled out. The American idea is that each of us has both the right and the duty to be ourselves as God made us. The right to differ is as holy as the right to be. A century ago, Henry Thoreau put this truth into unforgettable words. If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured and far away.
Thank you, Rabbi Greenberg. Our eternal light drama today, God Gives Us Many Lives, was written by Jan Hartmann and presented in celebration of Purim. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Heard as the older and younger Ruth, respectively, were Ida Reese-Merrin and Patricia Bruder. Others in the cast were William Mason as Leo, Guy Repp as the mayor, Roger DeCoven as Ruth's father, Stefan Schnabel as Commandant Schroeder, and James Dukas as the German soldier. The narrator, James Monks. We invite you to join us next week when The Eternal Light will present A Sheaf of Lightning, written by Virginia Mazur, the first in a new series honoring Nellie Sachs, winner of the 1966 Nobel Prize for Literature. This is Jerry Damon. The Eternal Light is directed by Kenneth McGregor and presented weekly under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.